Happy to be joined now by Elliot Friedman, of course, our NHL insider, NHL on Sportsnet. Friedge, thanks for this.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. So what do you make of this?
First of all, Ben, do you not find it a little strange?
Yes, I know what you're going to say.
That it's Blair's birthday, yes. And he called in yesterday and said, I'm going to be sick tomorrow.
Yeah, that sounds like the 24-ounce flu to me.
Like, does that not seem like a little bit odd to you?
It seems more than a little odd. I mean, I wasn't going to call him out in front of his employers, like, right here. But, yeah, no, it was definitely, like, it was back there in my cerebellum somewhere.
Okay, just was wondering if I was the only one who thought it.
No.
Okay, on to VC. You know what? Like, I think when it became clear he wasn't going to sign in Nashville, I think you're right. The two teams that jump into everybody's head was Toronto and Boston. Now, the Boston connection, not only is it his hometown, but one of his best friends growing up is a guy named, and I apologize if I get the last name wrong, it's Matt Grelchick. And he's the captain of Boston University. He has told a story before how at the 2012 NHL draft, he wasn't expecting to get taken because he was the 177th ranked central player by a central scouting, and he went there to support Vasey as one of his friends, and the Boston Bruins picked him 85th overall, and he has always been very loyal to the Bruins because of that. Now, he also can become a free agent on August the 15th, but the belief is that they are working on getting a contract done, and it could be done as soon as today. And there are a few people who have said to me, Ben, that these two guys would like to play together. So if Grelchick is indeed getting one done, I would not be surprised in the least if that's what Vasey's target is going to be in August.
What are you taking your coffee? I take it black.
No, I take it black too, Ben.
Attaboy. You know what? I actually read a study a couple of months ago about you're more likely to be a psychopath if you drink black coffee, but I don't care.
Well, I think you need to be a certain level of psychopath to be successful in this business.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%. Yeah, and I think we both get that accomplished. The one issue I have with black coffee, and especially when I get it from the Tim Hortons downstairs, is it's so bleeding hot. Like, they don't account for the fact that, you know, some people like black coffee. I have to have, like, three cups and then the little sleeve on it as well. That's the one issue with drinking black coffee.
Well, you know, you could do what the guy did to McDonald's a few years ago.
Yes.
Like, you know, just burn yourself and say, I want $10,000.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that. And a good movie made out of that as well. I believe it's called Hot Coffee. Talking to Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet, of course, NHL insider. So is it sticking with this VC thing for a second? Like, it's difficult to project. I understand. But, like, the Nashville Predators were ready to throw him into their top six here, and they're a playoff team. He must be pretty darn good, or at least the perception must be that he could be pretty darn good. Like, and you look at the possibilities for the Maple Leafs this offseason, and I know everything looks potentially rosy and things can go awry, certainly. But the potential of adding a Steven Stamkos, if they are able to land Jimmy VC, if they are able to draft Austin Matthews, you throw all those guys into the lineup in 2016-2017, that kind of changes things almost immediately, does it not?
Ben, you sound like a sports radio caller.
I know.
Yeah, of course it does. If they were able to do all those things, I think the feeling would be very different. I do think a lot of the future is going to be determined on, you know, where the ping pong balls end up and who ends up with the number one pick. You know, Lou Lamoriello said in an interview we did with him about a month ago that, you know, 50 to 60% of the roster could be very different. So I think there's a lot of different things that go into play. But I do think the lottery is going to be a big factor in determining the course of action for a lot of teams. If you get Matthews, it's a game changer for whoever does. So I do agree with you on that. But and you know what? You never know. Is that going to influence decisions that other players make? Yes, I'm going to want to go play with Austin Matthews, or no, for some reason I don't want to play with Austin Matthews. So I do think all the dominoes begin to fall on April 30th.
Reading your 30 thoughts on sportsnet.ca, which is obviously a must read. Anybody that enjoys the NHL reads it religiously. And you alluded to the comments or the rumblings out of Arizona that they would not trade Oliver Ekman-Larsson for the right to draft our Austin Matthews, or for the right to have Austin Matthews play in his hometown next season. Do you believe that? And how much do they want that hometown kid to play for the Coyotes with all the other young pieces there? Like, how is that more valuable to the Coyotes than maybe any other of the 29 NHL franchises?
I think you could make that argument, Ben, that he is more valuable there than anyone else. Don't forget also, they're trying to get a new arena built out there.
Yeah.
Whether it's at Arizona State, whether it's part of the native lands on the casino, whether it's downtown Phoenix, they're trying to get something done. They have to stabilize their future. And, you know, you can joke about who's built what arenas, you know, the United Center, the house that Michael Jordan built, the Flyers rink, the house that Eric Lindros built. There's no question that if you went into Arizona and you got him there, it would be the house that Austin Matthews built. I think the Coyotes, I mean, I'm sure that they will, if they don't win the lottery, they will call the team that wins and says, what can we do here? I don't think they would do Ekman-Larsson, but I think they might. But if I was running the Coyotes, I might do anything else.
Yeah.
Like, what else are we willing to consider here? No, you can't have that guy, but I will talk to you about just about everyone else. And I could see that scenario unfolding.
Elliot, if they win the lottery, I mean, there's going to be a real, real
Patrick
sense.
Ewing?
Yes, the frozen envelope, right? Like, that is
LeBron James.
100%, right? Like, even Anthony Davis, right, to the Pelicans.
That's right, because the NBA owned them at the time.
Right.
You know what? You're right. Like, it's almost like you can't win.
No.
You do win, everyone's going to think you fixed it.
They absolutely are.
Yeah.
The one team that if they win, no one's going to believe they fixed it. If the Oilers win again, I don't think anybody's believing the NHL fixed it.
Well, actually, if the commissioner, excuse me a second, if the commissioner had a sense of humor, you almost could say he should.
Yeah, I guess so. Talking to Elliot Friedman. So also in your 30 thoughts story on sportsnet.ca, you get into Adam Oates and Mike Yeo taking a shot at him, the fired head coach of the Minnesota Wild, because apparently Oates soured the relationship with Zach Parise, working with him. He's working with a lot of guys. But I guess Oates says he doesn't want back into coaching in the NHL, or at least is vocal in saying that he doesn't believe he'll be given another shot. It's one thing to say that. If he's offered a head coaching spot tomorrow, he's probably back in the NHL as a head coach, right?
I would think so. But I think one of the reasons I think he said that was that he realizes it's unlikely. You know, I think, you know, as you could tell by his answers to some of my questions, Adam is not pleased with the way he's getting blamed for things here.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the biggest issue is that this is new. You don't see a lot of this kind of specialization in the NHL for a while now. There's been some, but not a ton of it. And Adam is probably the most, you know, with Gary Roberts, teams are okay with fitness in the off season. Nobody's going to complain about that.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the skills coaching, Ben, Adam is probably the most high profile guy to do it. And Adam's very honest. He's very blunt. He's got a belief in the way things need to be done. And I think one of the problems is that nobody's really talked to him about what he's doing. He said the only general manager who's ever said to him, what are you teaching these guys, is Yzerman. And I think it's incumbent on, like, he's not going anywhere. Like, a lot of players will tell you they think he's very helpful. So if he's helping players get better and it can benefit teams, I think both sides have more of a responsibility to speak to each other now. Say, okay, what are you teaching these guys? Like, since I wrote that article, I got a call yesterday night from an executive who told me that one of the concerns they have is even some of the specific moves he teaches change the way their team attacks.
Really?
And I was like, okay, is that a good thing or a bad thing? And he says, it's both. It's good because we can see our player getting better, but it's bad because it affects the way, for example, we attack in the offensive zone. And I said, so what's the fix here? And he said, well, obviously, both of us are going to have to do a better job of communicating with him what we need and with him to us what he thinks he can teach. And so I think this is a bit of a work in progress. And I assume if everybody starts communicating a bit better, this will eventually work its way through.
Why doesn't a team like, say, the Maple Leafs, who hire, they realize there's no salary cap for front office guys, guys who are not on the ice. Why doesn't a team just gobble them up and say, all right, you're only working with our players now. If the players do rely on him so much and he is such a good teacher, why doesn't a team hire him as their specific skills coach?
Well, I think that has been discussed. It didn't happen. For example, the Maple Leafs did hire a guy, Darren Belfry, who's very good at his job. He is someone who has built a business doing this as well. And we showed some vids of him working with John Tavares last summer, and players do like Darren a lot too. So Toronto does have somebody. I think the issue is, and Adam will admit it to you too, his sheer force of personality.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he's, Adam's very honest, very blunt, sometimes too blunt for people who don't like it. And I think sometimes teams, like, as you know what happens, Ben, it's like when Paul McLean was hired in Anaheim to be the assistant coach this year, we're all sitting there saying, okay, whenever the Ducks lose three in a row, when's Paul McLean going to become the coach?
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you need is a strong organization there.
Like to say, look,
this guy's coming in, but he's not going to be the next coach. And
yep.
The other thing, too, is right now, Ben, I honestly think Adam wouldn't want to work for one team.
Yeah.
I think he likes being around the league.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, certainly there's the possibility of working with multiple players big time around the NHL when you're like a free agent, you're a hired gun. Essentially as a skills coach. Talking to Elliot Friedman here. What also caught my eye on the 30 thoughts is this issue with Vinny LeCavalier, which I think multiple people joked about at the time that he was going to retire at the end of this season, that there must be some sort of handshake agreement with the Kings that would happen because he could really screw them by sticking around because he's got a cap hit of $4.5 million for the next couple of years. And he's played well, and like this... I don't know. Is this a real possibility? And would the Kings not be all that pleased with Vinny LeCavalier actually sticking around?
Well, first of all, I should clarify, Ben, Philly's picking up half of the salary.
Okay.
So it's 2.25.
But either way.
Either way. But you have to remember that the whole deal was incumbent on LeCavalier agreeing to retire, right? Like they told him. They had a conference call with him a few minutes before the trade was announced, and they said to him, we need a commitment that you're retiring after this year. And he gave it. And I think as we've watched him and score pretty well, we're all sitting here and saying, is there any way this can change? LeCavalier is really smart at breaking down the game. The way he explained to me about the way that LA plays, it's pretty impressive and why it's a fit for him. He wouldn't answer that question. He made it very clear. He made it very clear that he was not going to answer that question. I assume they're going to deal with it after the season. But from what I understand, because they're trying to sign Milan Lucic, they have to extend Tyler Toffoli in a year. From what I'm told, they really don't have the room to do it.
Before we let you go, Frege, so Neil Yakupov, the understanding that yes, he did ask for a trade, at least that becoming public knowledge a couple of days ago. I don't know what his value is, but is this seemingly coming to a head here this offseason finally? And what is his value? Who'd be interested? And is there still some salvaging of his career?
Well, I don't think you should ever give up on a guy who's like 22, 23 years old who can score.
Yeah.
So I think there's probably going to be a team out there that's going to say, all right, we're going to take a chance. And I think it would be more than one. You know, people sometimes they get a bit caught up in the sense that there's a big difference between a team saying, okay, the agent's allowed to talk to other clubs to see who's interested and actually getting a trade done. Just because you can talk to other teams doesn't mean, okay, we're going to be able to make a deal 100%. And part of the reason is that I think if you're the Oilers, you're probably sitting there and saying, if this guy catches fire in another team, we better make sure that we get something in return that doesn't make us look bad. And as you said, right now his value is devalued. So I think the biggest problem is the Oilers have a set price that they're demanding in return, and nobody wants to pay it. And I do think this will get sorted out over the summer, but I don't think Edmonton's taking a bad trade. From what I understand, there was at least a team, maybe two, that got involved late, and they simply ran out of time to get a deal done before the deadline. We'll see, Ben, who revisits it once the season ends.
Yeah, could be real interesting. Thanks for this, Freach. And it's also great to know that you are a charter member of Team Black Coffee. Good for you.
Yes, and I'm sure Jeff's drinking a lot of it this morning. I hope his birthday party last night was really good.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for this, Freach.
All right, take care, Ben. Be well.
Yeah, you too. There's Elliot Friedman, NHL insider for Sportsnet.